welcome to this SearchSecurity.com podcast. I'm Eric Parizeau. It's great to have you with us. Today we're going to engage in some fact or fiction, discussing how to build and enforce data leak prevention policies. We're joined today by Rich Mogul. Rich is the founder of research and consulting firm Securosis. He has nearly two decades of information security experience and is the industry's foremost DLP expert. Rich, we're so glad you could be here with us. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Eric.
Before we get started, I want to mention that this podcast is part of our Data Protection Security School, which you can visit at any time by navigating to searchsecurity.com/data protection. Rich, to set the stage here, DLP policy is often overlooked by many organizations, even the ones that are serious about deploying a DLP product. So, in a nutshell, why are DLP policies and procedures so important?
Yeah, when you get down to it, the heart of DLP is its ability to deploy these content-based policies. And what we find is a lot of organizations don't define their policies properly. And as a result, they tend to get more false positives or more false negatives and have problems with a product that could perfectly help them with their particular problem. So by focusing on these policies, usually you get a lot more value out of the tool than if you try and use it and just, you know, hit a couple of check boxes and hope that it's going to work for you.
Okay, then, let's get to it. To explain how this works for our listeners, I'll read a statement, and you'll respond by telling me if that statement is fact or fiction, and then explain why. Here's the first one. Fact or fiction? All DLP tools enforce basically the same kinds of policies.
That one is definitely fiction. There is a huge variation in the kinds of policies that the different tools can support. Now, this variation tends to be in probably three major areas. The first is the actual content analysis techniques themselves. Every product does their content analysis a little bit differently. Even if you have two products that say they use the same content analysis technique, they both programmed it themselves, and these are complex things, and it's probably going to work differently in the real world. So that first area of major variation is those content analysis policies, both the different ones that are supported, and then how those things actually work. I can't tell you, Eric, how many times I get calls or emails from various vendors talking about they have some great new thing that they built in a lab, some great new kind of content analysis. And yet we find that when you put those things into production, what's written on paper may not necessarily be how it performs. Now, the second area in terms of policies for a lot of variation is what other kind of context can you get around in building the policies? Can you just look at sender recipients on emails? Can you track users back to their IP addresses? What other kind of context, business context, around the content can we look at? And that can have a huge impact. That'll give you a lot greater ability to have granular policies that only protect particular groups. And then we move on to the last component, which is the actual user group and role integration. In some cases, you can use your roles directly out of an Active Directory server to build your policies. In other cases, the tool requires you to enter those and make your own users and groups within the tool. In other cases, you can actually use a combination of the both. So it's really those three major areas that defines a lot of the variation in terms of the policies. What can you do in terms of content analysis? What can you do in terms of the context? And then what can you do in terms of your users and groups?
All right, here's statement number two, fact or fiction. Enterprises need to build a comprehensive set of DLP policies before deploying a DLP product.
Not only is this fiction, but if you attempt to build a comprehensive set of policies before you go into deployment, you're probably going to find a few surprises, and the odds are that deployment's not going to work. What we find is that you want to start with one or two, and preferably one, really small, well-defined policies. Start that all in a smaller group, so say roll it out to a particular business unit, and see how it works. And then as you get a better feel for how that policy works, you can start adding your next policy, and you can start expanding the use of that existing policy. These staged deployments are really important for DLP. This is the kind of thing that can interfere with business process. But if you're smart about it, you deploy your policies, you tune them properly in a monitoring mode before you go into enforcement, and those kinds of things, you'll find that you'll have a much more successful deployment.
Rich, are there any exceptions to that rule? For instance, is there often a need to prove ROI right away on a DLP implementation? Hence, perhaps a need to be more aggressive right off the bat?
Well, first of all, there is no ROI. I like to joke that ROI in security is like trying to measure the ROI of a fire extinguisher in the office or a cost of doing business. But no, generally, you know, you might have a case where you have suffered a major breach and you're going to have to throw a more aggressive policy out sooner. We have seen that happen. For example, an organization that was leaking a lot of Social Security or credit card numbers they weren't supposed to have in the first place, they may go ahead and deploy more aggressively. Understand it's going to interfere with that business process more. But for most organizations looking at DLP, they're not under that kind of pressure, and a staged rollout makes a lot more sense.
Let's move on to the next statement, fact or fiction. Effective, accurate directory integration is critical to a successful policy deployment.
Definitely fact, and we talked about this a little bit earlier when we were talking about the different kinds of policies. So not only is it important to be able to make policies around users and roles, but in my book, it's actually extremely important to have good directory integration so you can tie those to the users or roles of people within your organization without having to re-enter everything into some new repository or into some new tool. Now, the two key things here. The first is we actually found a lot of organizations don't define their directories very well, not only in terms of what users have what roles, but in terms of what roles are tied to what business units, what users are tied to what business units, and those sorts of things. So we do see that in some organizations that can actually hamper their ability to build policies. If you want to build a policy that only affects people on your customer relations team, and you don't have an accurate way of actually knowing who's on that team other than manually running through things, it's going to make your life difficult. The second major thing to look for is being able to tie users based on their IP address to who the user is. This is because if you think about it, most organizations, when you log in, there's a part of the network, DHCP, that gives you your address for your computer, and that's totally separate than the fact of you logging into the system being authenticated onto your computer or onto the network as a user. You really need to tie those together because the DLP tool, you know, it's going to see, other than for email traffic, it's just going to be looking at those IP addresses, and you really want to know what users tied to those. Now, we did actually hear a case once of a tool, and they fixed this years ago. They messed up how they did those ties, and in some cases, the wrong people were being accused of doing some very bad things. So you really need to make sure that that tie is accurate.
Okay, Rich, we're halfway there. Here's the next one. Fact or fiction, it can take up to 6 months to tune some DLP policies.
That's a fact. You know, the tools are pretty accurate. The problem is we have a lot of garbage data and a lot of things in our organizations we need to use to tune. For example, if you're using database fingerprinting, where you pull data out of a database and you use that to build your policy, you may have garbage data in your database that you have to pull out. If you're doing document matching, partial document matching, you may find that you have common headers and footers on those documents, and as a result, you'll need to go through and actually pull that information out of the policy so you don't get false positives. Now, it's not daunting. You can usually almost always get effective policies pretty much immediately. I mean, you're definitely going to get some pretty decent policies out of the box. Some of them are even built into some of these tools. But especially for some of the more complex policies, it can take some time to tune these. So don't think that every policy is going to take 6 months. Don't think that these tools result in too many false positives or anything. But you do need to take into account for the fact that in some cases it is going to take some time. You're going to have to tune those policies, even if you might be using those policies during that tuning process.
All right, a couple more to go. Fact or fiction, an enterprise can enforce all the same DLP policies on an endpoint as it can on the network.
That is fiction. It turns out that most of the endpoint tools have limitations in what they can do compared to the network. And if you think about this, so on the network, you can deploy a blade server or one U box. You can have, quad-core or octa-core processors, or, well, multiple quad-core processors sitting in a thing. You're really high performance and tons of memory and 32-bit operating systems and all those sorts of things. You can't really do that on the endpoint. You're not going to be taking your 100 million customer database and pushing that on the endpoint for local enforcement, at least not today. What we find is that you have to tune your policies differently for the endpoint than you do on the network. Typically, those policies are more limited. Although some of the tools, what they'll do is they'll actually give you the ability to have full endpoint policies when somebody's connected to the network via, say, a VPN or even just physically on the network, and then have those policies change when the endpoint tool is unable to communicate with the central server, and that gives you some more advanced abilities.
All right, Rich, here's the last one, fact or fiction. Enterprises should start with a policy in monitoring mode and then turn on enforcement.
That is a fact. It's one of the more effective ways. We spent a lot of time talking about how you can tune your policies. And in terms of enforcement, what I recommend for most people is take a policy, throw it in monitoring mode, see how well it works, and when you get an idea of how well it works, you can go ahead and throw it into enforcement mode. You can do this on endpoint, you can do this for discovery, you can do this for the network, pretty much any place where you deploy that DLP. And it's that ability to analyze those policies, see how well they're working before you flip the switch, that is one of the things that I think really helps make DLP useful. You can test your policies before it's going to interfere. Even your monitoring policies, you can go ahead and test those with, say, you know, the policy builder or one admin before you try to roll it out to everybody else who's dealing with the system. That way you're not going to be flushing people with false positives who are dealing with real incidents on a day-to-day basis. So, again, I'm not saying the tools have too many false positives. Once you have your policies locked down, they tend to be really good. We don't get too many false positive complaints. You know, it might be a false positive that it is a Social Security number going out, but it was, say, the employee submitting a healthcare thing. It wasn't actually one of your customers' Social Security numbers. Those are the kinds of things that we see. But so there's not too many false positives, but it still makes sense, particularly if you're going to go into enforcement, that you have an understanding of how many violations you've seen and whether or not you actually are going to have too many false positives, or I'm sorry, too many problems with your users when you throw it in enforcement mode. And by the way, the last part of that, too, is you can also deploy a policy in monitoring and alerting mode and send feedback to the users. We call this user education. And they'll change their behaviors as well, which can actually reduce the amount of interference there is with their ability to get their jobs done.
Rich, quick follow-up. For those organizations that are going to go ahead and put it in enforcement mode, how long should they actually be in monitoring mode? Is there a set amount of time? Does it depend on the number of events, or is it different for every organization?
No, it really is different, more based on the policies. You throw it in monitoring mode until you feel comfortable, you know how that policy will perform, and then when you're done with that, that'll give you the ability to go ahead and decide if you're ready to put it into enforcement mode.
Rich, as we wrap things up, once an organization has its DLP policies in place, how do you recommend managing those policies long term?
Really, for the long term, what you want to do is a couple of things. You want to keep an open dialogue with whoever is dealing with the incidents so that you know how well those policies are working or not working for them. The second is that you want to make sure you don't just set a bunch of policies and leave it and never go back to the tool. I mean, these things have a lot of capabilities, and there's probably things you're not thinking about you can use to reduce your risk as an organization. And so perhaps every quarter or every, you know, once or twice a year at a minimum, you want to do an audit and say, are we getting the results out of this we want? Are we using this to the capabilities that we think we can use this for? And finally, you know, you might find that policies are going to change over time. For example, if you're linking up to a customer database and all of a sudden you switch to a different customer database in order to feed your policy, you know, clearly that needs to be updated. The truth is once you put these things in, and unless they're a time-sensitive policy, and we do see some of those, such as things like corporate financials, that you only want to block it for a certain amount of time, and then it's public information anyway. Other than situations like that, there really isn't a lot of policy maintenance that needs to be done after you've gotten it through the initial tuning.
Rich Mogul of Securosis, great advice as always. Thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Eric.
For more materials in our Data Protection Security School, visit searchsecurity.com/dataprotection. And as always, you can also listen to more of our podcasts on our podcast page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. Thank you for joining us. I'm Eric Perrazzo. Stay safe out there.